Hey, this is Tyler, one of the hosts of RangerCast. On our show, we talk about Power Rangers and other multi-unit spandex heroes. We've got news, reviews, interviews. We talk about the comics, the games, the toys, and all things more phenomenal. Find us at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or check us out at RangerCast.net. May the power protect you.
Everybody, I would like to welcome you to another episode of Pop Culture Gems. This is a series where I, Davis Green, talks to amazing creators, artists, cosplayers, voice actors, and so much more. If you like the interviews we do with our terrific guests, like, follow, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, the CFG channel. We release Pop Culture Gems on all podcast services and also on our main website, confreaksandgeeks.com. If you'd like to support the podcast in any way, you can always become a CFG member by going to the main website, thecfg.store. Today, I am talking to a voice actor who has played in several anime, animated series, TV, and films. He was the Boss Baby in The Boss Baby Back in Business, the Joker in the upcoming DLC of Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League coming March 28th, Gawain in Fate Grand Order and Grand Carnival. But you should definitely check him out playing the shape-shifting mutant Morph in X-Men 97. I would like to welcome JP Karliak to the show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's a pleasure to definitely associate a face to the character.
Right. Yeah. Yes,
that's great. All right. Well, let's get this party started. So what is your story? Like, what got you into voice acting?
Ooh. So I grew up loving cartoons. I was obsessed with Looney Tunes and Disney movies and so many things. When I was right about the age where I started to recognize, like, oh, one day I will need to get a job, I saw the movie Aladdin, and I saw Robin Williams do his amazing thing, and I thought, okay, I want to do that. So in my brain, I associated, in order to be allowed to do voiceover, I would have to become a famous Hollywood celebrity. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll just go do that, you know. So I went and pursued on-camera acting. That's what I went to college for. My interest was in getting into TV and film, and thinking that one day I might get to do voiceover. And luckily, somebody in college, I had a professor, Kelly Ward, musical theater director and also director of many animated films. He's fantastic. He was in the original Grease movie. Kelly told me, yeah, you could just start auditioning for animation now. You don't have to be famous. I'm like, sure. So I started getting into voiceover while I was pursuing my on-camera career, but I found while on-camera auditions kept getting more and more limiting in terms of what they would send me out for, voiceover just kept expanding with all the different characters that I was allowed to play or that I would be cast as. So I was like, that, I want to do more of that. So I left on-camera, and now this is all I do. Not to mention, on-camera doesn't tell me what, voiceover doesn't tell me what color I have to dye my hair, so...
That's fair enough. So, but I guess the big thing, though, too, is like, I mean, even so, I mean, you knew, so your ultimate goal was you wanted to do voice acting. You knew you wanted to do voice acting at the at an early age, but you thought you went one way, ended up going where you were needing to be, which is awesome. Did you like doing on camera itself or performing theatrically in like plays, musicals and such?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had fun, but I think there's the difference between enjoying doing something and pounding the pavement to make it your living. Like, you know, when I would book something in, you know, I've done two on-camera projects. I was in Ringer with Sarah Michelle Gellar. I did one episode, which was fun. We had a good time. I also did an episode of Real Husbands of Hollywood opposite, oh my God, his name just flew out of my head. Wow, that happened. You know, funny, but anyway,
you remember when you're in school, when you're asleep too.
JB Smoove. Oh my God. Nice. Yeah, no, it was super fun. We had a great time working. But those are like the little blips of good times mm-hmm. in the midst of like a really the slog. And, you know, the same with musical theater. Like, I've done a bit of it and I've enjoyed, you know, when I've gotten to do cabarets or smaller shows, you know, but the idea of really having to make it my craft and perfect everything and be excellent in that, that's, oof, that is,
yeah, it's
that, I am not cut out for that. But voiceover, there's so many aspects of it, whether it's sounding like a character or creating new character voices or kind of, or, you know, just people watching and listening to how people make the sounds that they make and be like, ooh, can I try to do that? You know, that's stuff that I just get really fascinated by. And that doesn't feel like work. That feels like just having fun. So,
Sounds like you're like really loving that, the pitch and the audio, like audio files and stuff like that, you know, that kind of
thing. Absolutely.
Cool. All right. And you said you liked watching cartoons growing up and stuff. Like, did you watch the original X-Men series growing up?
So I would have been in middle school and high school when the X-Men series was on. By the time I would get home from school, I walked home. I would turn on the TV and the end credits of X-Men were rolling just as I was starting to watch the Power Rangers, which would come on right after. So I didn't really see it. And also I didn't have any friends who were into comic books. You know, that wasn't really a big thing where I'm from, you know, a small town outside of Scranton, Pennsylvania. There weren't a lot of really big comic book people in my friend group. So wasn't until I started watching the movies that I really got into the X-Men. And I would start like going, I would get fascinated by, wait a minute, who's that character? I want to know more about that person. And then I would do like the deep dive on the internet to be like, you know, who is that? I want to know more about their backstory. And, you know, so I would, so, and that's been true of everything from X-Men to Batman to the Avengers to, I mean, all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I love watching YouTube videos where they do the deep dive of Easter eggs. And I'm like, oh, that's what that is, you know? Yeah. So I kind of back ended into what all of that lore and backstory is. Right. But I love it. It's so much fun.
Hey, I mean, if you appreciate it, I mean, that's all one could ask. That's awesome. Do you like have any, like, I mean, do you have any like favorite heroes or villains in the Marvel or DC universes? DC universe. I'm not saying to pick one. You can choose as many as you want.
No, it's actually now that usually I have a hard time picking favorites, but this one isn't actually as hard as I thought. With Marvel, there's two villains that I absolutely am obsessed with, and that's Loki and Loki because I love him, Green Goblin because I play him and I adore him. He's just the most fun. He's just such a ball of mischief. At least the version I play. Like my Green Goblin, because he's aimed at the little kids, he's mm-hmm. never evil. He's always just mischievous, you know? And I just love that about him. But Loki is, I mean, especially what Tom Hiddleston has done with that character. It is just beautiful. From being a chewing the scenery villain to being a, you know, anti-hero to being a reform, like an actual hero, like there's so many levels to everything he's done. And then the DC universe, I mean, it's the Joker, man, like always has been, always will be. He's fantastic. I would expand that out to like the core rogues gallery of Batman, like Joker, Catwoman, Penguin, Riddler, Poison Ivy, Mr. Freeze, like basically, you know, more or less that iconic group from that episode of Batman, the animated series where they're all playing cards, you know, and all telling their stories. Just take out Killer Croc's fine. He's just not my favorite. Sub out Killer Croc from Mr. Freeze and we got it.
That's funny. You just make me go back in time with that card thing. I just
one of the best episodes ever.
It really was. You're totally right. And like, what do you like to play more? Personally, are you a fan of being a protagonist or an antagonist, and why?
I love villains, man. Huge fan of villains. I mean, and I will say, you know, Morph isn't a villain, but I do think one of the things that I love about the X-Men is mm-hmm. that they're misunderstood. And that's what I think I love so much about villains, is there's that element of being misunderstood, especially cartoon villains. I mean, when we start to get realistic, then it's like, well, you're just bad. But, you know, I grew up, my earliest cartoon fave was He-Man. And I didn't care about He-Man. I loved Skeletor. I was all about him. And I loved how misunderstood he was. I loved his quippy, sarcastic, biting humor. Mm-hmm. I loved that as much as he would just, the He-Man would always knock him out at the end of every episode. He was always coming back for more, always just wanted to get back to Grayskull every single time. And I love that about villains. Their tenacity is just so great, all with that biting sense of humor. And I think even though he's not a villain, Morph falls into that zone of having that, you know, he's had a very traumatic backstory from the original 90s series, but he overcomes so much of it with that snappy little sense of humor and his little laugh, you know, that masks all of that trauma, which I absolutely identify with.
Well, that's cool. And, excuse me. And I know, like you said earlier, man, and I'm kind of not surprised that you would choose Protag because you immediately listed all the villains on Marvel and DC sides as your favorite. Not even one hero was on your list there. So, playing an iconic villain as the Joker is a big deal. And you did it. Joker DLC that's coming, for DC's, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. Did you do anything special to kind of give your print playing him?
I mean, you know, it's, I think more than any role that I've played, that is a scary one to take on because of how many iconic, and I mean iconic, portrayals of the Joker have come before. You know, when I was a little kid, I was watching reruns of the original 60s Batman with Cesar Romero. Then I saw Jack Nicholson, then Mark Hamill in every iteration, and Heath Ledger. Like, there's so many. Not to mention, I always have to shout out my two other favorites, John DiMaggio and Kevin Michael Richardson, mm-hmm. and also Tony Hale. They also did do a fantastic job.
Not Troy Baker? So,
I said what I said. No. Troy is great, but I will say the ones that I really love are those.
Okay.
Three.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, you know. No. Troy's great. He's very talented. Yeah. So, you know, when I got the role, there's really a lot of that pressure of just figuring out, okay, what am I going to pull from? I will say the one benefit is, this is a Joker nobody's ever seen before. He's an Elseworld Joker from a totally different universe with his own backstory and his own set of circumstances. So I didn't feel pressured like that I had to sound like any given previous Joker. But you do need to put your own stamp on it. So I was just pulling from what I loved, little bits that I loved, while also he's a younger Joker and he's not quite as character-y as some. Mm-hmm. So it was really just a lot of me plus adding little layers of Joker on top of it. And I mean, the nice thing is that you've got, I mean, decades of laughter to pull from. So I could, you know, I could kind of play around with, like, you know, whether it's starting out with a, you know, just like whether it's with Heath Ledger and then building it into something more like, you know, like, for some Mark Hamill stuff. Like, so you really get to play around with all
that. I love
that.
That's great. And I can't wait to see it. I haven't checked it out yet, but I can't wait to check your
cut for
it.
Yeah. He's great.
And you are, and as we've been saying before, you're playing the loved shape-shifting character Morph. Like, overall, mm-hmm. how was your experience playing this character?
Super fun. Really, really lovely. I think, as I said, you know, really getting into a character who has a traumatic backstory, overcomes a lot of that with humor, also, you know, has such a deep and wonderful friendship with Wolverine and is the comic relief for the entire squad. You know, he's there's a lot of layers to him. Not to mention, he's also a collaborative character. I play him when he's in morph form, but whenever he transforms into another character, that actor who plays that character is doing me playing them, you know? So it's interesting to, you know, we were at the premiere and finally seeing the episodes for the first time, hearing how other actors have done morph, you know, when I change into them. It's really cool. It's really neat to hear their interpretation and how it all kind of seamlessly becomes this one person.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. You're totally right. I was just thinking morph as the base character, but I didn't even think about the other voice actors have to play your character in that form. That must be kind of surreal though at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, the sort of given that I say is like, if you see a character come on screen and they start talking in a snarky, sarcastic voice, it's me.
You know? Oh, that's great. And Morph is also the first non-binary mutant in X-Men officially. I'm just glad to see the representation in a series like this. Did this put any kind of level of pressure to play him on that role, or any kind of like thing just to make sure that the representation is there? Excuse me, there?
Sure. I mean, there's, I mean, you know, I identify as genderqueer, so it, you know, and which is a, in some senses, a synonym for non-binary. So I didn't feel that I wasn't going to get it. Like, you know, that wasn't the hard part. But there is, of course, that pressure of being the first and having that responsibility of a portray, you know, of portraying that character right and making sure that the people who identify as non-binary or as any gender non-conforming identity felt taken care of in, you know, in this portrayal. But at the same time, I think we're at a juncture in queer representation where not everybody wants to see every queer character be squeaky clean and perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, as a matter of fact, we kind of want to see a little imperfection so that it doesn't feel so patronizing.
Or stereotypical.
You know, yeah. And more like, you know, it's funny. We're kind of going through the full circle of that. For so many years, there were a lot of villains that were queer coded. Mm-hmm. You know, to appear like they might be queer. And then we got out of that. And we're like, no, we don't want to villainize queer people. And now they're heroes. And now they're, you know, and then they're all like sparkly tooth, like, you know, perfect. And now we're kind of coming back like, yeah, but we want to play villains. Like, that's okay. You know, we're people just like anybody else who have a variety of different personas who can be, like, some of us are good, some of us are bad, some of us are in the gray areas, you know, most of us probably are, and getting to show all sides of that. So I think taking a breath and taking the pressure off and just being like, I'm just going to be me and be me as more, and just trust that that's enough, and I don't have to put on any extra shellac to make it suitable for a queer audience, because I'm one of them. Like, you know, it's not.
Well, that's, that's cool. I mean, like, I guess the biggest thing is like I love the, like, I mean, like you said, I loved X-Men because I think I could relate to X-Men a lot more because I felt like they were always the odd man out and they always were the people that were afraid of them. And then just that fight to come back and then that level of imperfection and just to see the fact that they're adding more to that finally after, like, I mean, the spin around since the 60s, they're finally doing things like adding non-binary like to the mix of all of this stuff on top of being a mutant and of a group in the race that's not fitting in is just very interesting to me, and I love to see that kind of level of representation. And on top of that, having someone that is queer running at that level. So I mean, I just think that it's a good way of seeing going that way without kind of, you know, being in that stereotypical kind of level, like what you were saying. So I definitely enjoy that.
For sure. And I mean, you know, just the quick plug, like I, you know, I run an organization called Queervox, which is a nonprofit academy and community for LGBTQIA plus voice actors. And so much of what we fight for is not just that authentic representation that we get to play ourselves in these roles, but also that we're entrusted to play the gamut of characters, you know, just as we've been for you know, hundreds of years entrusted cisgender and straight people to portray anything they want, you know, we should have that freedom as well to have that full gamut of roles open to us so that we can make long lasting and fulfilling careers in this business. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. That was actually my next question was about your Queervox Queervox sites. That's
great. We're on the same wavelength. We got it. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I just love seeing that kind of stuff. And you're definitely doing a great job trying to spread that level of awareness. Cause I like, especially I saw like that you also you're definitely doing a great job with that website. So thank you on doing that. And my last question to you is, if you had like any kind of power, it doesn't matter what it is, like what would you choose and why?
Oh, the mutant power thing. You know, I've thought about this a lot, and not because I've been asked this in interviews, but because I'm just that nerd that sleeps up at night. Like, what would I have? I think I've settled on teleportation.
Teleportation. That's actually,
I love to travel. I also have, you know, my mom is also across the country. Like there's a lot of, I have a lot of friends spread around, you know, the country, sometimes the world, and to be able to be with them and see them on a moment's notice, or just like, you know, just pop over to some like, you know, European city, or like, you know, go have sushi in Tokyo, or like, you know, like, yes, that would be awesome.
It'd be kind of weird because if you're the friend, if I was the friend of you, and then I'll be like, hey, is he going to be here today? I'll be like on eggshells every time you just by snap, you're right there for no reason.
Oh, we'd have to have like a decorum. Like, it's like, I'm not going to show up unless you call, you know, unannounced. So that would be weird.
Right. Oh man, Jay.
But the nice thing is you don't have to, like, you know, put me up for the night. I can just go home.
That is a very good point. You're totally right. But man, JP, thank you so much for stopping by talking to me about this. It was really awesome to talk to you. And folks, also, like, definitely go check out X-Men 97. It is coming out March 20th, or it's probably out now by the time you hear this, but it's on Disney Plus. So definitely check that out. It's going to be a great watch. I'm sure of it. But
oh, you have no idea.
How many episodes is it?
10 episodes. The first two drop on the 20th, and then every week after that will be one at a time.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Great. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. Looking forward to it. And guys, if you definitely love this interview with JP Karliak, you could definitely check this one out on any of the other ones that we've done in the past on our on any podcast services, or go to our main website, confreaksandgeeks.com, to check out the full library and volumes of everything we do here. So once again, this is Davis signing out. Y'all, take it easy.